Blog Talk Radio.
When you hear this chapter, this
Books Publishers. But this is was actually chapter 21 or so of the book. And it starts this way. It's entitled Fukushima. On March 11, 2011, a 9.0 earthquake hit Japan and destroyed the Fukushima nuclear power plant, rupturing its reactors. The tsunami that immediately followed the quake destroyed the generators that kept water flowing through the reactors to keep the nuclear heating rods cool. Without these generators, fresh water was unable to flow into the reactors, and the reactor cores reached levels of over 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit, and the core of the reactors 1, 2, 3, and 4 began to melt down. As of this writing on May 22nd, which is when I completed this article, the Fukushima power plant is unapproachable by plant workers due to the extreme heat of the cores and due to the extreme amount of radiation released from the plant. Reports from Japanese news agencies recently stated that it was literally raining radiation in Japan. Parents were advised by the Japanese government's announcements to have children dressed in complete rain gear and use umbrellas. Schools have been closed, and Japan is experiencing radiation levels that far exceed the recorded level from after bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. World news sources have censored most news from Japan regarding Fukushima. And radioactive clouds following the jet stream have been detected by satellite as covering the U.S. and Europe. Plutonium has been detected leaking from the meltdown reactors into the ground and ocean waters near the Fukushima plant. The ecological devastation caused by Fukushima may take years to realize, as an estimated one-third of the world's oceans, as well as more than half of the country of Japan, may be completely uninhabitable, and one-third of all ocean life will be destroyed. As reported by ABC News on April 6, 2011, in an article from ABC Health News, it states, the Fukushima disaster has become more than a local, regional, or nationalist Japanese event. The worldwide implications of the event are becoming apparent. Though a major leak in the maintenance pit of the plant has been plugged, there is still a great likelihood that significant amounts of radioactive water will continue to be released into the Pacific Ocean. The worldwide just-in-time manufacturing cycle has been interrupted, and increased levels of radiation have been detected on the U.S. East Coast. Now, that was stated by ABC Health News. The meltdown of the Japanese Fukushima reactors is the prophecy fulfilled by the anti-nuclear power activists of the 1970s. A video report by Japan's news online, nexuscommunity.com, states that the water surrounding the Fukushima plant was 7.5 million times the acceptable safe levels of radiation. Also, reports by independent sources show released government satellite images of radiation clouds across the Pacific Ocean and covering North America, San Francisco, and surface water levels at 14,000 times the acceptable safety rate for radiation. That's in San Francisco, right? National news broadcasts have reported Boston, Massachusetts had surface water levels of 800 times the acceptable safety rate of radiation, and Northern and Central Europe have reported hundreds of times the acceptable rate for air and water. Andy Cohegan, reporting for Short Sharp Science in his article, Fukushima Leak is Plugged, TEPCO in More Hot Water, states, now the leak has been plugged, the hope is that there will be no further release of radiation, okay, either to the atmosphere or to the ocean. But levels of radiation in the four worst affected units remain high, so high that, according to one recent report, they're off the scale. In my book, Naked at the Mic, which I released last year and will be re-released and totally revised in August, in Chapter 2 of my book, I mentioned my good friend Joe Besaid, Joe was a fierce anti-nuclear activist who whose incredible courage and commitment and courage of others brought the closing of the Millstone Nuclear Power Plant in Waterford, Connecticut in 1996. Joe was the steam fitter foreman during the building of the Millstone plant. Once he saw the corruption and incompetence of the people in charge of building and operating the power plant, he became obsessed by his need to warn the state and his community about the problems he saw in the building of the power plant. One of his proven claims was that the Steam Fitters Union was in collusion with Northeast Utilities in hiring unqualified steam fitters and plumbers. Joe testified that he witnessed the state licensing tests were rigged for those working on the Millstone plant, and because of the lack of licensed steam fitters needed to build the plant. Joe was a steam fitter foreman for the plant, and Joe was a master licensed commercial plumber for 30 years. He knew that the men who were hired were not qualified to work on a nuclear power plant. This happened with many of the trades. Electricians were unqualified but passed the licensing test. This was told to Joe by his close friend and plant electrician supervisor after his complaints were ignored by the state and the company. His life was threatened on several occasions by the unqualified workers who attempted to electrocute him. He was fired by the company shortly after the complaints were made. He joined forces with Joe as a whistleblower and joined the Connecticut Coalition Against Millstone, which became a formidable citizens' action group that galvanized the Waterford community and forced politicians to review their claims to halt construction of the plant and prosecute Northeast Utilities and the union. In 2001, I made a 2.5-hour documentary on the Connecticut Coalition Against Millstone. I featured the men and women who courageously fought their 20-year battle against the nuclear power plant in their community. Joe Besaid filmed over 10,000 hours of public hearings and aired them on the Eastern Cable Access Station that serviced Waterford and the surrounding towns, and featured them on his weekly cable access television show. It was the fierce activism of the Coalition Against Millstone and the courageous legal actions of attorney Nancy Burton, co-founder of the Connecticut Coalition Against Millstone, that led to the closing of the Millstone plant. In 2000, the closed plant was purchased for 10 cents on the dollar by a private company called Dominion. Dominion was allowed by a corrupt Department of Utility Control to reopen Millstone under a 20-year permit. The plant was already closed for 4 years and had been proven unsafe. Northeast Utilities was found negligent in the construction of the plant and was forced to close Millstone and fine $10 million. Joe and the Coalition fiercely fought to keep the plant closed, but to no avail. This is where I came into the picture. Made my documentary in May 2001, featured on all community access stations throughout Connecticut. In making this documentary, I learned that the NRC, which is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the supposed watchdog committee for the nuclear industry, is paid for by the nuclear industry, and its commissioners are all selected by the nuclear industry. Little, if any, government oversight is involved with decisions affecting the nuclear industry, except for each state's Department of Utility Control, which grants operating permits and oversees rate hikes. At the same time I was creating this documentary on a coalition against Millstone, I was fighting my own battle with the Connecticut Department of Utility Control. I learned just how corrupt this state agency of politically appointed commissioners really was. I had filed suit against AT&T to manage my local public access station and claimed hundreds of thousands of dollars that were owed to the community by AT&T for not providing community access television to their Northwestern Cable, Connecticut Cable franchise area. They were charging their subscribers for the service each month without providing service. When I proved this to the DPUC and filed an intervener in the AT&T franchise renewal agreement with the state, I developed a strong case against AT&T, which was upheld and defended by the Connecticut Council Consumer Council's attorneys. The lies, contempt, and evasion of AT&T in their defense were obscene. The collusion of the DPUC and AT&T was undeniable and brought forth a legal argument by the Consumer Council's chief attorney. The judgment of the DPUC was hotly contested by the council's attorney, who cited 22 flagrant errors and omissions in their final decision. This is all public record. When confronted in oral argument in a public hearing by the council's chief attorney, the DPUC chairman stated that he would take the council's criticism under advisement, however, never changed the decision. In the DPUC original decision, I was granted the management of the television station. My final request, advocated by the consumer council's attorney, was that a full audit be conducted to verify all monies owed to the community. While waiting for this audit to be done, the final decision was suddenly rescinded and an audit was never done. AT&T created another local non-profit group to challenge my application and the DPUC's final decision. The AT&T group did not require an audit, nor did it ask for any verification of AT&T funding of the access to system. I understood after this two-year fight with the DPUC and AT&T that Connecticut had the most corrupt political appointees in the nation. They were all appointed by a former governor, John Rowland, the most corrupt GOP governor Connecticut has ever produced. In February of 2003, he was arrested for fraud and corruption and served 1 year and 1 day in federal prison. His lieutenant governor, who was also under suspicion of fraud, was made governor by a Democratic legislature and kept the corrupt DPUC commission unchanged. The DPUC allowed the Millstone plant to be reopened under the protest of thousands of state residents and several leading state legislators. Connecticut is a politically corrupt state and will continue to be if nothing is done. So far as of this writing in 2011, no significant changes have been made to the DPUC, and the Millstone nuclear power plant, still in operation on extended permit, has been recently cited as one of the most unsafe nuclear power plants in the United States. From my experience and research regarding the oversight and regulatory agencies involved in protecting the public from the utility companies and corruption in the nuclear power industry, I have a complete lack of faith in the safety of nuclear power plants and could never, under any circumstances, support the use of nuclear power. Einstein was once quoted as stating regarding nuclear energy for power plants, "It's a hell of a way to heat water." And an article from Alexander Higgins' blog, dated 4/19/11, states, "Nuclear expert Annie Gunderson talks about the danger involved with the Fukushima nuclear reactor, saying TEPCO's plan to stop the radiation from leaking in 6 to 9 months is a really optimistic schedule. He also reveals that there are 20 plants in the U.S. and the same design as the Fukushima reactor, which means they have the same vulnerabilities to catastrophe." Real News Reporter website, in an article dated 4/11/11, April 11, 2011, states, "Secret weapon programs inside Fukushima nuclear plant. A fire ignited inside the damaged housing of the Unit 4 reactor, reportedly due to overheating of spent uranium fuel rods in a dry cooling pool. But the size of the fire indicates that this reactor was running hot for some purposes other than electric generation. Its omission from the list of electricity generating operations raises the question of whether Unit 4 was being used to enrich uranium. And the first step of the process leading to extraction of weapons-grade fissionable material. The bloom of irradiated seawater across the Pacific comprises another piece of the puzzle, because its underground source is untraceable, or perhaps unmentionable. The flooded labyrinth of pipe where the bodies of two missing nuclear workers, never before disclosed to the press, were found, and could well contain the answer to the mystery. A lab that none dare name." Now, the censorship of accurate reporting from Japan and Fukushima since April 2011, 1 month after the disaster, has been stifling. As stated by Vivian Norris in HuffWorld, on 5/9/2011, in her article "Deadly Silence on Fukushima," she quotes a Russian nuclear physicist who states, "I have been following the Fukushima story very closely since the earthquake and the devastating tsunami. I have asked scientists I know, nuclear physicists and others, about where they find real information. I have also watched as the news has virtually disappeared. There is something extremely disturbing going on." And this is from a Russian nuclear physicist. And in the same article, Nora says, Yusugi, stated, Yusugi, I believe, is the prime minister, of Japan, stated that since March 11th, the government has excluded all internet media and all foreign media for official press conferences on the emergency situation, while foreign media have scrambled to gather information about the Fukushima reactor. They have been denied access to the direct information provided by the government, and one consequence of this is that rumor-rife news have been broadcast overseas. So they're saying it's inaccurate. This censorship does not surprise me. However, the scope of the Fukushima disaster has global implications. Why the national and international media are not demanding release of the current information from Japan is unforgivable. The only reason for this is that the crisis is so big it cannot be contained. I have seen independent reports on YouTube by scientists and concerned citizens displaying classified information and and satellite tracking maps on the global radiation booms coming from Japan crossing over the U.S. and Europe. Meanwhile, as the censorship continues, TEPCO and the Japanese government have found a way to clean up a few troubled urban neighborhoods by finding unemployed and expendable Japanese to clean up Fukushima. This is verified in an article from Japan Today entitled Reports from the TEPCO is finding its cleanup workers for Fukushima from the poorest neighborhoods in Japan. This was released on March 17th, rather, a week after the disastrous earthquake and tsunami that struck the Tohoku region. I noticed was, I'm reading this from the Japanese paper. A notice was posted at a worker recruitment center in Arin, the rundown neighborhood of Osaka's Nishinari ward, where thousands of impoverished day laborers congregate and search for construction and other blue-collar jobs. As reported in Asahi Genio, the ad read, wanted drivers for 10-ton trucks in Onagawa. Okay, pay is 12,000 yen a day. But two workers who signed up for the job instead found themselves dispatched to work in the nuclear complex of Fukushima. And on May 14th, Japanese media reported the death of a man in his 60s who'd been working at number 4 reactor at the Fukushima nuclear power complex. The cause of death was determined to be heart failure, probably brought on by his working successive 12-hour shifts. Shukan Ashi, a source who knew the deceased, tells the magazine that it's fairly common to see men in their 60s laboring at such jobs. Previously 55 in the cutoff, but with the accident, they take older workers. Perhaps reflecting the sense of desperation over the nuclear crisis, working conditions for the men inside the plant appear to be brutal. They don't announce it, but on-site, workers are collapsing almost daily due to bone fractures and heart and heat stroke. The source tells Shukan Ashi, which is that newspaper, it's being hushed up. Spreading the word will just make the subcontractor look bad to Tokyo Electric Power, so nobody says anything. I want to refer you to a website called Millstone, mothballmillstone.org. The following articles and headlines are a few gathered from the Coalition Against Millstone's website, which is mothballmillstone.org, and can be read in their entirety on the website. To the Coalition's credit, great credit, sensitive and censored information is being made available to the public regarding Fukushima and the unsafe conditions of nuclear reactors around the U.S. and the world. Please support their valiant efforts to stop the proliferation of nuclear power plants. There are a few articles that I refer to in my essay. Radioactive rain causes 130 schools in Korea to close, yet rain in California had 10 times more radioactivity. Telegraph of London has reported, Fukushima evacuees denied refuge and medical treatment over radiation fears. The moment Nuclear plant chief wept as Japanese finally admit that radiation leak is serious enough to kill people. And Fukushima, there is no safe dose of radiation. That's from Nuke Watch in Wisconsin. You have to, I urge you to go to that site, which is mothballmillstone.org. And you can read this essay if you want. It'll be coming out. I would like you to, with the time remaining, and I'll probably go over this over my allotted time tonight, but the hour. But this is extremely important to read, I believe. And again, now I'm referring to Garudas' work. Chapter 19 of Treason and the New World Order. It's entitled Radiation, Biological and Chemical Experiments on People. Here's a quote from Elizabeth Stanton. She states, "The more complete the despotism, the more smoothly all things move on the surface." On December 7th, 1993, Energy Secretary Hazel O'Leary announced that some people were exposed to radiation in various government-supported experiments. In late June 1994, the Energy Department state said that until 1989, about 1,200 people took part in 48 undisclosed radiation experiments, often without even being warned of the dangers. On October 21st, 1994, the President's Advisory Committee on Human Radiation Experiments revealed that there had been many more intentional releases of radiation into the air than had previously been known. Instead, 13 known releases were of 13 known releases, there were hundreds of deliberate releases. The committee also announced that there had been many more experiments on people between 1944 and 1974 than had previously been announced. Excuse me. The Secretary of Energy, Hazel O'Leary, stepped forward is the main reason why the story received national coverage. O'Leary was probably influenced by Eileen Wilson's three-part series, The Plutonium Experiment, in the Albuquerque Tribune, dated November 15th through the 17th in 1993. Previously, there were only limited coverage of these sanctioned atrocities, although considerable material was available by 1986. In 1969, the Archives of General Psychiatry discussed radiation experiments involving humans. The Washington Post gave brief coverage to a similar story in 1971. In 1980, Congress issued a report, The Forgotten Guinea Pigs, concluding that the AEC chose to secure, at any cost, the atmospheric nuclear weapons testing program rather than to protect the health and welfare of the residents of the area who lived downwind from the site. In 1981, Mother Jones reported that NASA funded radiation experiments took place for 14 years at Oak Ridge Institute, an AEC clinic. In 1986, Representative Edward Markey failed to get the government to release documents on these experiments. He released a report, The American Nuclear Guinea Pigs, detailing government human radiation experiments on nearly 700 people, saying that American citizens thus became nuclear calibration devices for experimenters run amok. The victims were captive audiences or populations that some experimenters frighteningly might have considered expendable. On December 15, 1994, the New York Times reported that as early as 1947, fear of lawsuits, bad publicity, and poor labor relations motivated officials to keep secret radiation experiments on people. These experiments were not isolated events. They were part of a broad and planned program that was debated in the highest levels of government. National security was often not a primary concern. On January 18, 1995, it was reported that some people injected with radioactive material, including plutonium, were not even terminally ill. They often did not have cancer, and many not have even been chronically ill. They were doing experiments of unknown risks on people who potentially had a full, long life ahead of them. One victim was 18 years old. Often people were not informed that they were being experimented on. In February of 1995, the Energy Department, the Office of Human Radiation Experiments, reported that 9,000 Americans, including children and newborns, were used in 154 radiation tests on humans. Retarded children were fed radioactive breakfast cereal. Prisoners had their testicles irradiated, and pregnant women were given radioactive iron. Some children were given radioactive injections, while the parents were told they were being given vitamin supplements. On August 19, 1995, the Energy Department said 16,000 people were in these radiation experiments. The total number of victims is probably much, much higher than 16,000, but CIA and military records are not available for review. By the early 1960s, 500,000 radioisotopes have been distributed to doctors and universities. That many of these people weren't told they were exposed to radiation violated the Nuremberg Code established in response to Nazi atrocities. The victims were usually poor, uneducated, often black, and had a low IQ. Testimony revealed that some victims experienced extreme pain. And Lenore Finn testified that she watched an unsedated Jacob Lefton in agony when his skull was opened, exposing the brain. A sedated a doctor told her that he would not remember the pain as pain. And to this day, a doctor involved in this atrocity defends his work, just as the Nazis' doctors did. And the U.S. government has sanctioned the torture of its citizens in the name of national security. How far we have fallen to allow the foreign governments in Washington, D.C. to so abuse us. And similar radiation experiments continue today. The president's investigating committee said that 125 recent government-funded human research proposals, 31% were ethically unacceptable. In 1995, 1,077 institutions received almost $5 billion for research projects. Since this story first broke, the CIA said it found only one instance of radiation testing on humans. However, Scott Breckinridge, a former CIA official, said that in 1972, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, head of the chemical section of the CIA's Technical Service Division, destroyed many files, including secret human radiation experiments. In 1975, the Rockefeller Commission said the CIA may have conducted radiation experiments on people. In 1994, the scientists interviewed on television defending using humans in radiation experiments because it benefited science. Hitler would have been proud of this in the name of a science and national security, which we may learn about in 30 to 50 years. For every revelation we read about, how many secrets are being kept? The Human Radiation Experiment Committee final report on October 1, 1995, only recommended compensating people in a few experiments, found little fault with those conducting these experiments, and did not even recommend attempting to contact and notify the victims. From the late 1940s until 1979, between 250 to 400,000 military personnel and 150,000 civilians participated in 626 U.S. nuclear explosions. These included 235 atmospheric tests. Other victims included over 200,000 U.S. troops who were stationed by Hiroshima and Nagasaki after World War II. Government experts said there was no danger from exposure and radiation in these cities. Starting in 1951, about 57,000 American troops were stationed in the open, a few miles from nuclear test sites, and were then ordered to march towards the test site usually minutes after the explosion. The 1989 movie Nightbreaker shows actual footage of American troops in this situation. Many of these troops got very ill years later from this exposure, but the government resisted recognizing a relationship to the test to help these victims. Oscar Rosin, a commander of the National Association of Atomic Veterans, said, "They didn't have to use us as guinea pigs in the nuclear warfare experiment and then discard us like expendable rats." Another victim, after years of severe illnesses, said, "All I have ever asked is to live like other people, but I cannot help blaming the government for subjecting me to nuclear testing without warning me of the potential consequences, and I was always wondering why it happened." I mean, I'm sorry, guy, but you're a freaking moron, all right? You know, walking into a nuclear bomb. I mean, what kind of moron soldiers are these? What kind of people are these that are so stupid they would do this? I mean, they're obviously expendable. I'm sorry. But nevertheless, it shouldn't have been done. But, you know, you're a moron. It is estimated that 5 million Americans were exposed to toxic levels of radiation because of various government programs. Our soldiers were not given proper protection during exposure to nuclear tests. They were not volunteers, and they were never given accurate information as to the dangers involved. These soldiers rarely received medical testing once they left the military, and usually their records were lost or destroyed. And by the late 1970s, many military personnel complained about their radiation-related sicknesses, and this became an issue in the media and in Congress. Marine Major Charles Brody was directly exposed to radiation from nuclear testing. Before he died in 1977 at age 57 of a rare lymphoma, he and his wife filed a lawsuit against the government. After his death, the lawsuit was consolidated with 43 similar suits. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals rejected the claims, and the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear the case. So much for fucking justice in this country. The Veterans Administration also rejected these claims because it refused to link these problems to their exposure to radiation from these tests. Although this has somewhat changed, formerly in 1988, Pat Brody and others convinced Congress to pass the Radiation Exposed Veterans Compensation Act that provides veterans with compensation for 13 types of cancer. But listen to this, folks. Even with this new law, specific standards must be met for veterans to receive up to $75,000 and other disability payments may then be discontinued. They get a $75,000 lump sum and then the disability payments discontinued. Veterans cannot sue the government under the 1950 Frez decision because such suits would inhibit military necessity and national security. Sensitive Senator, remember this prick, John Warner, sponsored an amendment giving contractors at the Nevada test sites the same immunity that the federal government has. And under a 1988 law, 38 U.S.C. 5904, strict limits are placed at the right of veterans to use lawyers and appeal before the VA Board of Veterans Appeals. Civilians can collect up to $50,000, but few people filing claims have received any money, and usually the amount paid has been quite small. By 1993, 14,374 military veterans exposed to these tests filed radiation-related claims, but the VA had verified a relationship of their sickness to the test in only 1,250 cases. The government continues to require proof of exposure to radiation that is difficult to prove with a poor record-keeping, and the government's solution is to keep calling for more tests while the victims continue dying. I'm going to jump ahead because a lot of this is basically based on the same thing, but I want to go ahead because I wanted to mention. The federal government exposed millions of Americans to these tests in the name of national security. The AEC, a top secret document, said Utah was a low-use segment of the population. Low-use segment of the population. And during the testing, the AEC worked very hard to convince people that the tests were safe, despite sudden and widespread cancer and mental retardation. Women were often told their cancer was caused by neurosis or housewife syndrome. The government invited people to come and see the pretty mushroom cloud because it was all so safe. Eisenhower reportedly said, We can afford to sacrifice a few thousand people out there in the interest of national security. Where in the Constitution does it say that thousands of Americans can be injured or killed by the federal government in the name of national security? I haven't found such a hidden clause in the Constitution that allows this, and the press never asks about this. But Einstein said, yeah, go ahead. You know, they're low, they're expendable people out there. They're dumb, stupid people. They call them a low interest. Unbelievable. As a low use segment of the population. Imagine that. A low use segment of the population. Part of the problem has been the callous attitude of the AEC, Atomic Energy Commission. Thomas Murray and the AEC commissioner said, we must not let anything interfere with these tests. Nothing. The AEC even encouraged people to watch nuclear tests to keep a positive attitude about the peaceful atom. And Dote Troxell was in a serious radiation accident in 1957 while working at the Atomic Energy Commission plant. After developing serious radiation sickness, she was transferred to AEC clinic and operated on. When she awoke and asked what had been done to her, the doctors told her they couldn't tell her because of national security. A typical and disturbing way in which the government deals with citizens is presented in The Myths of August, which is a book by former Representative Stuart Udall. As a lawyer, Udall tried to get government compensation for uranium miners and people who lived downwind from nuclear tests. Udall was certain that once the government understood how people's lives had been damaged, there would be just compensation from the authorities. And during his investigation, he obtained documents which showed that the government knew uranium mining would be extremely dangerous if there wasn't proper ventilation in the mines. And such ventilation was never done, and the miners were never informed of the danger. Right? Udall, also a former Secretary of the Interior, uncovered information that while the government was telling the American people open-air nuclear tests were quite safe, it had secret documents depicting the side effects of such nuclear testing, including cancer, genetic disease, genetic damage, and death. And according to Udall, this was a classic cover-up. I listened to him being interviewed, expressing his deep shock that the government would admit no wrong and help these victims. The government has strongly fought all lawsuits filed concerning nuclear testing or uranium mining. In 1987, U.S. versus Allen reversed a lower court ruling, making the government immune from such laws. In 1990, the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act gave civilian victims some compensation after the courts blocked any restitution. The Bush Justice Department, Bush Sr., worked very hard to defeat this bill. The recent revelations of government radiation tests on people has brought numerous lawsuits. Federal Judge Sandra Beckwith refused to dismiss one suit because the defendants treated at least 87 of its citizens as though they were laboratory animals. The government has been contemptuous of animal and property rights as it has been with the lives of American citizens. During and after many years of open nuclear testing in the West, newspapers rarely questioned the safety of what was happening. The classic example of media bias is covering the nuclear industry was what happened, which aired March 16th. It was a documentary, I guess, and that aired March 16th, 1993, on the Three Mile Island accident. Owned by GE, a manufacturer of nuclear power plants, this NBC show said most people are now content. Debbie Baker, who was interviewed for the show, was very angry because she took out of context what she said and gave a false impression of her opinion. Her son was born with Down syndrome after the accident, and she was paid $1.1 million by Metropolitan Edison, a local utility. There were almost 200 similar settlements, but none of this was discussed on the show. When asked why no experts critical of nuclear energy appeared on the show, a producer said the program was entertainment, not journalism. And it's still that way. Goddamn NBC, CBS, ABC, CNN, MSNBC, they're all whores. Every one of them are whores. Okay? Entertainment shows. There's no news. Believe me. Hasn't changed since 1991, or even before then. The story is the same with nuclear weapons industry. Nothing in our past compares to the official deceit and lying that took place in order to protect the nuclear industry. In the name of national security, politicians and bureaucrats ran roughshod over democracy and morality. Ultimately, the Cold Warriors were willing to sacrifice their own people in their zeal to beat the Russians. The Hanford nuclear weapons plant in Washington State and the other bomb factories were allowed to endanger their neighbors and foul the environment because government scientists and officials didn't trust the people they served. Coming out of World War II, the government maintained that wartime claimed to extraordinary secrecy. For their part, everyday citizens, motivated by fear of the Soviet menace and of an awesome technology, abdicated the responsibility to determine the national interest in a time of peace. This article is very involved in this chapter, and I'm trying to I want to edit it somewhat for redundancy, but there's little understanding of the long-term effects on the millions of people exposed to radiation. Government-funded studies usually show a low incidence of cancer for people downward of nuclear tests, while privately funded studies show exactly the opposite. When statistics are used to identify the causes of cancer, nuclear energy sites, we have all been exposed to levels of radiation that may be quite toxic. The Journal of the American Medical Association recently reported that baby boomers are three times as likely to have cancer as their grandparents. One in three people will die of cancer in the U.S. The Boston Globe reported on January 9, 1994, that according to the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, there have been 6,290,000 deaths worldwide from exposure to nuclear radiation. John Goffman, MD, a scientist who studies radiation and health, found in 1969 that the government manipulated statistics and underestimated by at least 20 times the risk of cancer from radiation. He said, there is no safe level of radiation. The head of the AEC told Goffman then they would get him. He lost his funding at the Livermore Laboratory, and the National Cancer Society refused to fund his research. Goffman has seen so many government cover-ups that he doesn't consider the Department of Energy a credible agency. Alice Stewart, another radiation scientist, found years ago that exposure to radiation in low doses was far more dangerous than was understood, and few wanted to believe her research, and she had difficulty getting funding. So we've been lied to and lied to and lied to like idiots, okay? And you know, by our government over radiation. And now with this Fukushima nightmare that's going on and all the 100 plants that are still in operation in this country and the thousands that are in operation around the world, they're all leaking radiation. They're all exposing the public to it, and they don't give a crap, all right? Yeah. I mean, it's just... And this is the callous disregard, the callous, heartless, inhuman methods and people that are running our government, that are running these operations that are killing us. Approximately 150,000 Americans were deliberately exposed to mustard gas and other chemicals during and after World War II. They were forced to take part in these tests, threatened with prison if they violated the test secrecy, and were given no follow-up medical care, even when they got sick. Amazingly, many were given man-break tests, deliberately designed to expose the soldiers to levels of gas that would definitely cause illnesses. The intention was to test the equipment and to study how well the injured victims would function. The chemical poisons were often applied directly to the victim's body to test the results. These 150,000 soldiers were deliberately killed. These veterans rarely got aid from the VA because there was no official records about these tests. For almost 50 years, there was an official policy of denying that the tests ever took place. In 1980, the National Academy of Sciences studied the long-term effects of exposure to chemical warfare agents from 6,720 soldiers who had participated in these experiments between 1955 and 1975. There was a statistical correlation between chronic exposure to mustard gas and cancer. One report said at least 4,000 soldiers suffered serious injuries from these tests. In 1991, CBS's 60 Minutes reported on this cover-up, and Representative Porter Goss, interesting because he became the head of CIA, if anybody remembers, okay, tried to get benefits for four participants of U.S. Navy mustard gas tests. The standards required by the VA to provide help were lowered. However, problems continue to be caused. Records are often incomplete or missing. In the 1950s, soldiers were given chemical and biological warfare agents at Fort Detrick, Maryland. These troops staged a sit-down strike to learn what they were being given so they were replaced by Seventh-day Adventist volunteers. Imagine Mormons. The Mormon volunteers came in to replace these 4,000 guys. The documentary Bad Trip to Edgewood described how over 7,000 U.S. troops were exposed to gases and injections, often with no advance warning. Powerful mind control drugs such as PCP or angel dust and LSD were used. During the 1950s and 60s, 740 soldiers and 900 civilians were given LSD. The troops were never told that they were what they were taking, and they were ordered not to tell anyone about these tests. There was no follow-up medical care, and some of these victims suffered serious psychological and mental problems, including nervous breakdowns and epilepsy. Even people in mental hospitals were given mind-altering drugs without their consent, and at least one person, Harold Blauer, died shortly after being given a mescaline derivative. Years later, his family learned what happened, and after a 15-year lawsuit, they won $750,000. There were many lawsuits, and in one Supreme Court decision, a dissenting judge compared the Edgewood test to Nazi experiments. Australia, Canada, and England conduct similar tests during World War II, as depicted in a 1989 Australian documentary called Keen as Mustard. At least 1,000 Canadians were injured, and several thousand Australians now receive disability payments because of injuries suffered during these tests. During World War II, the Japanese developed CBW weapons that were widely used against China, and they seriously considered sending them to the U.S. in balloons. Some balloons did reach the U.S. with conventional weapons, killing at least one person, and over 12,000 people died from these Japanese experiments, including some U.S. prisoners of war. In August 15, 1995, NBC's Dateline had a story on these tests, and one American veteran who was a victim said they received little help from, and our government has betrayed us. This is a typical story about veterans getting fucked over by the U.S. government. All right. I want to speed this up a little bit because there's more and more and more, and I'm just going to recommend this book so highly to anybody who's listening tonight. And the book is called Treason, and the New World Order by Garudas. I know I've seen it available on Amazon. It's still available, and you can get a copy of it. I'm going to read some of the more horrendous paragraphs here so you get an idea of what happened. For years, the CIA and 200 medical schools and mental hospitals gave diseases and chemicals to citizens without their knowledge. The government also released CBW agents in many U.S. cities, including New York, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco, to see how people were affected. In 1950, in San Francisco, 11 people were hospitalized and one person died in the experiment. Relatives of deceased victims learned in a lawsuit that the U.S. conducted 300 open-air biological attacks across the U.S., between 1950 and 1969. In 1955, the CIA released a whooping cough virus in Palmetto, Florida. At least 12 people died. The Army Chemical Corps released mosquitoes by Carver Village, an entire black town, to see if they could carry and spread yellow and dengue fever. The tests were a success, and many people got sick and some died. There were over 40 germ warfare tests against American citizens. In 1966, the Army dispensed the bacteria in New York City subways. In 1968, the CIA almost poisoned the water supply of the FDA headquarters in Washington. In 1969, over a four-month period, cadmium sulfide was sprayed 115 times in Maryland. Total insanity. During a 1977 congressional investigation, the Army admitted conducting hundreds of open-air experiments with toxic agents. Just absolutely unbelievable. As documented in Bad Blood by James H. Jones in a notorious Tuskegee study, 412 black American sharecroppers, all right, near Tuskegee, Alabama, were studied for 40 years, starting in the early 1930s. None of them were ever told that they had syphilis because the U.S. Public Health Service wanted to watch the disease develop. Symptoms including insanity, paralysis, blindness, and death, but they were never given penicillin, although that was an effective treatment. That would have interfered with the study. The program ended in 1972 when a federal employee went to the press after his private complaints starting in 1966 went unanswered. The victims received no help until 8 months later, just as congressional hearings began. In 1931, numerous Puerto Ricans were deliberately injected with cancer in an experiment led by Cornelius Rhodes of the Rockefeller Institute. 13 died. Robert Rhodes wrote in a letter, "The Puerto Ricans are the dirtiest, laziest, most dangerous, and thievish race of men ever inhabiting this sphere. I have done my best to further the process of exterminating by killing off 8 and transplanting a cancer in several more. And by all physicians take delight in the abuse and torture of the unfortunate subjects." This letter was given to the recipient, to a Puerto Rican Nationalist Party. Rhodes was investigated, but although he never denied writing the letter, the prosecutor said Rhodes was just a mentally ill person or a man with a few scruples. So he was never prosecuted. And during World War II, Rhodes headed two large chemical warfare projects. He had a seat on the Atomic Energy Commission, and he headed the Sloan-Kettering Institute of Cancer Research. Later, when many National Party members were imprisoned in Puerto Rico, they were exposed to radiation, burning, poisoning, and experimental drugs. Here, we see the mentality of certain people in the secret government. Carefully reflect on this, and with great concern, the corporate elites have today about the population explosion. How many people are there like Rhodes, and what would they do in a world dictatorship? There have also been experiments to use genetics as a weapon. In 1962, 40 scientists were working just on genetics. I have one more minute, less than a minute. If anybody's listening and like to hear the remainder of this, I'm going to go on for a little while. Please give me a call. It's 646-915-9505, and you can listen to this live for the remainder. But If not, please listen to the archives. I guarantee it'll be worth listening to. The U.S. has a long history of using CBW agents and experimental drugs on prisoners. The birth control pill was first given to Puerto Rican and Haitian women. An American doctor gave Philippine prisoners beriberi and the plague. In 1915, 12 prisoners in Mississippi were given pellagra, while in the 1940s, over 400 Chicago prisoners were given malaria. And prisoners in Philadelphia were exposed to dioxin between 1965 and 68. As with laboratory animals, these tests are done to develop weapons or new drugs for the public. And during the Nuremberg trials, Nazi doctors defended their atrocities by citing some of these American experiments. There have also been experiments to use genetics as a weapon. By 1962, 40 scientists were working just on genetics at the U.S. Army Biological Warfare Laboratories. In 1969, Congress heard testimony about the advantage of this research, and within the next 5 to 10 years, it would be possible to produce a synthetic biological agent, an agent that does not naturally exist and for which no natural immunity could have been acquired. It would probably be possible to make a new infective microorganism that could differ in certain important respects from any known disease-causing organisms. Thus, they brought in AIDS. Most important of these is that it might be refractory to the immunological and therapeutic processes upon which we depend to maintain our relative freedom from infectious disease. Within a few years, the AIDS epidemic began. There is much literature available, such as the works by Alan Cantwell and Robert Stecker, MDs, stating that this germ was deliberately created, probably at Fort Detrick, but that subject goes beyond the scope of this book. Some researchers like Dr. Garth and Nancy Nicholson feel genetic research had to feel genetic research to develop CBU weapons has continued for years. A lawsuit in 1987 forced the Department of Defense to admit that CBW research has taken place in 127 sites about the U.S., and some of these sites are using recombinant DNA techniques. Just horrendous. Just absolutely horrendous. Over 50,000 Gulf War veterans are sick. Some feel, this is as of March 12th, as a CBS 60 Minutes report said that over 50,000 Gulf War vets are sick. And that is from the Great Gulf War, which was supposedly a victory. And some feel the number is quite higher. Joyce Riley, a nurse active in helping those with CWS, said 7,000 Gulf War veterans have died and over 200,000 are sick. These ill troops would have difficulty defending the U.S. The Senate has found evidence that GWS is contagious, with 78% of the spouses and 25% of the children affected. GWS is that in October 1995, suit was brought and dismissed, regarding the biological weapons of these different corporations. And it said large U.S. used corporations supported the enemy during World War II. It should not surprise the objective observer that similar activities continue today. The Justice Department under Bush and Clinton has refused to bring charges against these corporations, and obviously under Bush Jr. and Obama, nobody's bringing up any corporate anything. Okay, it's just a fucking joke. You know, and they're killing us, folks. They're just killing us. Soldiers. They're killing people. They don't give a damn. That's why I'm saying, and I keep reiterating, that's what Fukushima was all about. No question. That's why it's not done. Because they know. And New World Order, you must understand that the New World Order guides stones, if you will, or their plan was to disseminate three-quarters of the population of the world. If it was too many people, you know, they don't care. But the elite mode will live. You know, they can stay away from it. But the insanity of it all is that this will destroy them as well. You know, it's totally absurd. I said the article, the chapter's fairly long, but I wanted to get into this last part of the chapter before we leave tonight. And Nazi and Soviet researchers found that fluoride millions of Californians, there's another thing on MTV, through a contact in the Justice Department, Garth Nicholson heard there is a secret eugenics directive in various East Coast laboratories, and friends at several laboratories confirmed this. Perhaps this is why U.S. troops were given these toxic vaccines. And the Nicholsons also have evidence that these illegal toxins were tested in certain prisons. Information has leaked to them partly because some people involved in these criminal activities got sick and they came to the Nicholsons for treatment. And although they have given interviews to the national media, each report was suppressed. Garth Nicholson has written 400 scientific papers, edited 13 books, been nominated for the Nobel Prize, and is editor of associated editor of 13 scientific and medical journals. MTBE, is a highly toxic chemical that the EPA is forcing states and cities to use in gasoline. And the percentage of MTBE that goes into gasoline is being increased. Oil companies are promoting this chemical to increase their profits. It evaporates in the air, causing serious respiratory, neurological, and allergic problems. Readily soluble in water, it is now found in groundwater. And a prominent Italian scientist, Dr. Maltoni, found that MTBE caused cancer in animals. Dangerous chemical reactions such as formaldehyde and tetrabutyl formate occur when MTB is used. When it was introduced in Fairbanks, Alaska, up to 50% of the population promptly got sick. The studies of the disease control, the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, brought in doctors who said MTB was the cause. The EPA rejected these findings and blocked the CDC from conducting further investigations. Great freaking agency, right? The EPA and the CDC. The governor ordered removal of the chemical and all gasoline sold in the state and in Alaska, despite EPA threats to withdraw federal findings and symptoms promptly disappeared. Right after they got rid of the damn stuff, all the symptoms disappeared. The same thing happened in Missoula, Montana, and Stamford, Connecticut. Stamford, Connecticut, although fewer people were affected than in Alaska, over 16,000 people signed a petition to remove MTB from gasoline sold in New Jersey, and this poison has been banned in North Carolina and parts of Pennsylvania and New York. It's also banned in Connecticut, by the way, and that's why we pay a little more for gasoline. Millions of Californians have been exposed to the pesticide malathion through widespread airborne spraying. This is true. This is very dangerous stuff. This was supposedly done to protect crops, and there are plans to use it in other states. Other methods of medfly control have been underutilized, while malathion glutathione has mainly sprayed over population areas, not over crops. See, I know that if anybody's used glutathione, it's a highly, highly toxic substance, and it's usually sprayed on trees, or they use it to get rid of gypsy moths or med flies or whatever. Not over crops. This was very popular in the 90s, not so much nowadays, but it's still available. 1989-90, 509,583 pounds of malathion were used. It causes numerous health problems, and its toxicity greatly increases when used as a spray. Malathion is a chemical family adopted, developed by IG Farben to subdue or kill people, and it was used in the concentration camps. In the summer of 1988, the Oregonian did a 9-part series about CIA front companies such as Evergreen Helicopters. Through a front company, the CIA is directly involved in spraying malathion over Southern California. Hey, what the hell is going on here? Why is the CIA interested in exposing millions of citizens to this poison? Why does the government allow the widespread use of pesticides that are so toxic to our health? Fluoridated water causes disease such as Down syndrome, heart, kidney, cancer, bone, and liver problems. Fluoridated water. 11 European countries and 200 U.S. cities in the U.S. Congress has shocked to learn that the National Cancer Institute had never tested fluoride for cancer. The NCI took 12 years to conduct these tests, which demonstrated a sharply higher incidence of bone and joint cancer in regions with water fluoridation. The U.S. hip fracture rate is now the world's highest, and even the Journal of American Medical Association magazine on August 12, 1992, blamed water fluoridation. Nazi and Soviet researchers found that fluoride created a docile, sheep-like obedience and demeanor so that it was used in prison camps. Charles Perkins was sent to Germany by the U.S. to help run IEG or IG Farben, the giant chemical corporation, after World War II. In 1954, he wrote the Lee Foundation for Natural Research or Nutritional Research. The German chemist worked out an ingenious and far-reaching plan of mass control. Sodium fluoride occupied a prominent place. The real purpose behind water fluoridation is to reduce the resistance of the masses to domination, control, and loss of liberty. Today, many tranquilizer drugs like Daladorm are made from fluoride compounds. In a recent government report, the revolution in military affairs and conflicts short of war, future strategies are suggested. Drugged food would be supplied to Cuba to subdue the population and lower the incidence of anti-government activity. There is a second purpose behind the introduction of fluoride. The fluoride found in nature is calcium fluoride, while the type used in our water is sodium fluoride, which is a waste product from the aluminum industry. In the past, there were numerous lawsuits over this poison, so the aluminum industry used propaganda, money, and political influence to turn a chemical used in rat poison into a product we all needed. They had a large corporation who sold toxic waste and earned more profit. The aluminum giant Alcoa was owned by Andrew Mellon, and its chief attorney, Oscar R. Ewing, took a senior public health job in Washington in 1946 to promote water fluoridation. The Safe Water Fluoridation is working to stop fluoridation. Safe Water Foundation. In recent years, food irradiation has become increasingly common. Foods are exposed to radiation supposedly to kill various microorganisms. This may preserve food longer, but it also damages the chemical structure of food, creating free radicals, including benzene, which causes cancer. And irradiating food also causes mutations in viruses and bacteria in food, producing more resistant strains, and some vitamins and nutrients are destroyed. In 1979, a review of food irradiation literature found hundreds of adverse effects in animals. Animals fed irradiated food developed kidney damage, lower growth rates, lower birth rates, tumors, immune system damage, and genetic mutations. Government committees ignored this evidence because of political pressure to approve food irradiation. At a recent food irradiation conference sponsored by the World Health Organization, the U.S. worked to expand food irradiation. The The FDA reviewed 441 studies and eliminated all but five of them because of poor quality. Even these five studies had problems, but this weak evidence was used to approve further food irradiation. Radiation is also used to sterilize medical equipment, sanitary napkins, and tampons. As with fluoridation, the radiation used to irradiate food is an industry waste product. All right, Food and Water Inc. has been fighting the fight to stop food irradiation. As with fluoride and water and radiation in food, sewage sludge is another industrial waste that has been added to our food supply. Farmers are using toxic sewage sludge as a fertilizer to grow foods or to grow crops. The Environmental Protection Agency has already reclassified sewer sludge as an unregulated fertilizer, and it is being sold commercially with no monitoring. This sewage may contain highly toxic chemicals and biological toxins, but it increases corporate profits. The EPA has provided $300,000 to the Water Environmental Federation to educate the public about the beneficial uses of sludge. All right. The WEF, which is the industry's lobby group for sewage treatment plants, and the EPA want farmers and food processors to use sewage sludge as a beneficial fertilizer. The water industry says sewage is not toxic and calls it biosolids. All right. The book Toxic Sludge is Good for You discusses this outrage. The fourth atrocity that will shortly be perpetrated against the American people is the introduction of genetically engineered foods that contain genes derived from fish, insects, pigs, viruses, and bacteria. This is genetically modified foods, folks. The FDA will not require labels on genetically engineered foods. They still do not to this day. And although such foods have already injured people, genetically engineered soybeans mixed with a Brazil nut protein cause a severe allergic reaction. No one is sure that this food will be safe, and mixing human and animal or insect genes may cause many problems in the coming decades. However, the biotech industry has sufficient political power to manipulate the government to increase profits. Bovine growth hormone has recently been added to milk, and the Monsanto Corporation took legal action to scare small companies into not labeling their milk bovine growth hormone free. Cows fed BGH get udder infections, and more antibiotics are used, which get into our food supply. Some cows even die, and BGH increases milk production, which will force small farms out of business and help shift milk and dairy production to South America to raise corporate profits as NAFTA, all right, unfolds. And we already know what NAFTA has done. And this book was written in 96. So, you know, you see what's happened. And BGH is being used to help introduce other genetically engineered foods. The Union of Concerned Scientists issued a report calling for this to be stopped until the ecological consequences are understood. The long-term health effects are also not understood. The European Council of Ministers has banned BGH use until 2000, and the Pure Food Coalition have been fighting to remove this chemical from milk. Now, Europe has already banned GMOs or banning major problems there. And bovine growth hormone. Now, the next is my pet peeve. Aspartame, used in NutraSweet, is in every single stick of gum, okay, and diet soda and everything else has aspartame in it. Is another chemical associated with the Nazis. The Pentagon once listed it as a prospective biochemical weapon. Researchers have connected this chemical with a remarkable number of illnesses. A study by the Nutritional Institutes of Health, adverse effects of aspartame listed 167 reasons not to take it. It erodes memory, depresses intelligence, and is another cis substance that helps subdue and control a population. Alex Constantine has documented numerous ties between Monsanto Corporation, the main patient holder of aspartame, the CIA, and Nazi corporations involved in germ warfare. A consumer group has released a deadly deception and is working to ban this chemical. And it hasn't been banned, folks. It's still there. It's still prevalent, and more prevalent than ever. And the government is deliberately exposing us to more and more chemical radiation and biological agents. With the corporate elite so concerned about population growth, are there deliberate plans to reduce the world population through the use of various poisons? In examining these insidious programs, consider the horrific statements made by individuals in Chapter 4, about our overpopulated planet. People should get involved to stop these deadly programs. I can't emphasize to you any more than I have what kind of crap is happening here. And I just can't. Try, folks. I try to explain this, but you know, if you're not listening, you're not listening. I've been talking about this for years on my radio shows about genetically modified foods and about chemtrails and about, you know, human population reduction and what it means. And I'm connecting now this Fukushima, you know, to another diabolical, worldwide, human. Depopulation, all right, method, all right, and these fucking people are diabolical. They're not people. They're not. These people, they're things. They're creatures. They're less than creatures. They're not even living. They're dead zombies, demonic zombies. You know, they're these presidents and these congressmen and these senators and these corporate CEOs. These guys are fucking dirt, okay? And it's just disgusting. And I have to refer you to this book because if you don't, you can go to Amazon.com. I know it exists there. I've seen it. And check it out. It's called Treason, New World Order by Gurudas, which is G-U-R-U-D-A-S. And I believe he's dead now. He passed away a number of years ago, but, his book stands as a milestone to anyone who, understands what's happening and is worried about what's happening. A well-documented book, and I highly encourage you to read it. I hope you enjoyed tonight's program. I hope you got something out of it. I hope you pass it on to your friends, family. Have people read these books. God. And look for, you can get a copy of my book right now, Naked at the Mic, Survival of the Liberal in a Time of Peril. It's available on Amazon.com. But I got the new revised issue will be coming out in, I believe, August, I've been told. And it has 22 chapters. My own book has 16 chapters and about 166 essays. In fact, this will be reduced in some essays, but I want to, I really beg of you to get Gurudas' book, Treason, New World Order. And Laura can read about genetically modified foods. Look up aspartame, and see what kind of nasty shit this is. Okay, and look, get involved, folks, at least in what you're eating, okay? Know what you're eating. You know, maybe it'll help you live a little longer, or at least a better quality of life. Stay away from processed foods. Thank everybody who joined me tonight, and I wish you peace.